You're tuned to Sound Effect on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today's theme is Turning Point. Off the coast of Fiji in the Pacific Ocean, beautiful, brightly colored coral reefs sit a few inches below translucent waves. And it's these unsuspecting reefs that changed everything for one family back in 1974. But before we get to Fiji, their story begins in the early 1970s in San Francisco Bay, where Chuck Wilcox and his wife Dawn loved to sail with their two kids, Garth and Linda. They'd glide through the waters of the protected bay, Chuck dreaming of life at sea and Dawn imagining all of the new places they could visit. Chuck and Dawn eventually asked, why not sail around the world? Why not show our kids what life is like beyond San Francisco?
So they went out and took all the navigation courses, learned how to fix diesel engines.
That's Garth, who was just 13 at the time they left California. Today, he's a naval architect in Seattle. He designs boats. And his wife, Wendy Hinman, wrote a book about the Wilcox family's adventures called Sea Trials, Around the World with Duct Tape and Baling Wire. Garth and Wendy came into the studio to talk about this epic trip. Garth's parents spent several years preparing for their voyage. And then in 1973, they left California on a 40-foot sailboat called the Vela. It means sail in Spanish. The family stopped first in Hawaii, then off to French Polynesia.
Then Cook Islands.
American Samoa.
And Western Samoa, followed by Tonga.
Covering thousands of miles of the Pacific Ocean. And this little family of sailors, they learned some hard lessons along the way. Like the time they spent an entire month sailing right into the wind and the waves on their way to the Marquesas Islands.
We ripped every sail during that trip. We were in the doldrums, a place with no wind at all, and with only the storm jib. And my mom and I spent a lot of time sewing sails.
The family had a lot of equipment problems, but they also had some unforgettable adventures. There was the trip to the Polynesian kingdom of Tonga, a little collection of islands that was never colonized.
And strikingly, they were hunting whales in longboats, you know, under oar and sail, and hand harpoons.
And did you eat any?
Yes, they caught one when we were there, and we were pretty excited to get anything related to meat because we hadn't seen anything but canned corned beef for months. My mom and I rode over there, and they put it in a big bag and tossed it to us, and we went home, and my mother had to figure out how to cook it. But she put it in the pressure cooker, and it tasted pretty much like beef, actually.
After Tonga, the Wilcox family headed west to Fiji. The plan was to stop at Fiji's capital, Suva, and then sail south to New Zealand and wait out the hurricane season. But the cruise to Fiji was stormy. Clouds covered the stars, which was a problem. This was before GPS, and the family was finding their way around the world by using the stars and the sun as a guide.
You cannot take sights if you cannot see the stars or the sun. So you're just predicting your position based on speed and course, which over time gets more and more inaccurate.
So you spot land. It's the early morning hours on September 19th, 1974.
Mm-hmm. We spotted land in the form of a glow on the horizon, which was the capital city. That was right where we thought it should be, so we weren't way off course. But we were off course, unfortunately.
Fiji is filled with all these outlying reefs.
That's Wendy Hinman, Garth's wife.
And they're submerged, and they're really difficult to see.
This is the middle of the night.
So it's 4 a.m., pitch black.
What happened?
Well, we hit the reef. It was a big crunch. The boat sort of comes to a stop, shudders. And in this case, the tide was high enough, and the breakers were big enough that they just picked the whole boat up and put us up on top of the reef, and very quickly.
What was the damage?
Well, in about an hour, we had a hole in the boat.
How big was this hole?
You could drive a car through it.
So you're on the reef. The sun is starting to come up. Mm-hmm. You guys realize you're in trouble. What do your parents do at this point?
Well, you're hanging on for dear life. Yeah. Water's everywhere.
We called for help on the radio. We shot off flares, all the standard stuff.
And as the sun rose, they could see a little island just half a mile away. Garth, who was now 14, and his parents put 11-year-old Linda into the life raft and waded to shore.
And we got to the island. My dad turned around, took a picture, thinking that was probably the last time we'd ever see the boat. And it was kind of a, well, now what do we do?
At this point, did you know if anyone was on their way to help you?
There wasn't. We had had no response to the radio, and apparently no one saw the flares.
And there was nothing on this island. It was just sand and scrub and a couple of mango trees.
Later that day, they were spotted. Garth's dad, Chuck, went to Suva for backup. A salvage company in Fiji told Chuck that the ship could not be saved. So they got as much of their stuff from the wreckage as they could. This was their home, after all.
I think our stamp albums got salvaged early on. My mother sacrificed her clarinet, much to her ongoing regret.
So the boat is destroyed. Most of their belongings are trashed. They go from the freedom of the wide open water to renting a house in Suva. To make a little extra money, Chuck and Don strip the inside of the Vela. They sell everything from cushions to the kitchen sink. Time to head back to California and be grateful for the adventures that were had and for the fact that no lives were lost. This is what most of us would do, right? Well, Garth and his family were almost about to make this turn back to the States, but then a glimmer of hope. A different salvage company tells them, hey, the boat, it can be saved.
By this point, the boat has been out on the reef for like 6 weeks, several storms, getting battered, getting driven further and further onto the reef, and of course, you know, shoveling coral and ripping a bigger hole every time it moves further onto the reef.
Yeah, but they got us to Suva, in, you know, still afloat. We hauled the boat out the next day with the only crane possible that Fiji had.
The Vela would live on, but she needed to be rebuilt. Before the crash, Garth had been a solid handyman on the ship. But after the wreck, at the ripe old age of 15, he became a third partner in this venture.
My parents had prepared the boat pretty much by themselves. But now I was doing, let's say a third of the work to repair the boat. I was doing that myself. So I had invested my own self into this project at that point.
What did you do?
Well, we hired a firm to help us patch the hull, but then we had to rebuild the entire interior of the boat. It had been gutted by the reef.
Filled with barnacles and sand.
Yeah. So first thing we did was redesign the interior so that it worked better for the four of us. So we moved the galley around and changed the settees and added a bunk. So I drew that up, and then we had to make it happen. So I with my father, rebuilt the entire interior of the boat.
So you did the redesign?
Yeah.
How long did this process take?
I want to say 10 months. Working in the tropics is brutally hot. It was very hard work. But we eventually got the boat back in the water, and off we went.
How did this wreck shape the rest of the trip?
It was really completely different after that.
In what way?
We had used an extra year that we didn't really have. A good chunk of the money that was supposed to get us around the world, we had spent it fixing the boat up. The other thing that changed is we had all invested so much in that rebuilding process that I don't think anyone was really willing to give up. And what crept up on us over time was that the equipment problems were pretty serious. We spent the rest of the trip just patching the boat up to get it to the next port.
There was the storm during which they had no sails for reducing sail. And so they took all the sails down and were running bare poles. And they got rolled and smashed in one of the windows. And so water is gushing inside and there's water several feet deep.
We had to pump.
And because of that, they decided that they didn't want to go around the Cape of Storms, the Cape of Good Hope. So they decided instead to go through the Suez Canal, which had just reopened.
Yeah, we knew nothing about sailing in the Red Sea. I think the Cape of Storms would have been easier.
Yeah, the Cape of Storms didn't have pirates, gunboats, mines, thieves.
Yeah, it just had
two
storms.
Two hostile nations. Yeah.
So you had a lot of near misses from that point on, from salvaging the boat, repairing it, and then the rest of your cruise. It was not a smooth ride.
No, nothing smooth about it. It was pretty much a struggle.
How did the dynamics change in your family?
I continued really enjoying the experience, frankly. I like the challenge of it, I think. My father, he wasn't liking it anymore, but he was determined to finish it somehow.
It also changed the dynamic between you and your father. Chuck was the leader of the family initially, and through the voyage, Garth started to take the lead and almost became the captain by the end of this voyage. Chuck was just so frustrated. He had done so many things to try and keep that boat going, and he just was fried, and he kind of gave up a couple of times.
Do you remember having to step in and be the captain for your dad?
Told me. He appointed me captain one day, and then I had to figure out what to do.
How old were you?
I was probably 15.
What'd you think?
I didn't want to be the captain in particular, and I didn't know how long he was going to feel that way. So what we did was we turned around and headed for the nearest port and just had a cool down period, and things were better after that.
You were 13 years old when this voyage started, and by the time you got back, you and your family made it back to San Francisco Bay, and mm-hmm. you were 18 years old. How did this shape your worldview when you got back to land?
So most of my skills that I had developed were completely irrelevant to being on land. You know, I didn't have to know how to navigate, stand a watch, you know, steer during a storm. I had to know how to study in college, and that was really hard. But it turns out to be very valuable in my career. I design boats for a living, and I need to come up with creative solutions to new problems. And that's exactly what I learned how to do on this cruise.
After their trip around the world, Garth's mom, Dawn, and his sister, Linda, never sailed again. But Garth, he continues to love the open water. In fact, he did another around-the-world trip, this time with Wendy. He says it was a lot more relaxing than the first adventure. You can read more about the Wilcox family and their travels in Wendy's book, Sea Trials, Around the World with Duct Tape and Baling Wire.